We're going to get back into our series on our 12 unlikely heroes, and we're going to continue our story of Joseph, and we're going to look basically in Genesis 40, 41, we'll kind of move around just a little bit here and there, but catch you up where we are in the story. So we've already covered the details of his birth, kind of his family history and the things that go on there. We've talked about the feud inside of his family and his brother's resentment and his being sold into slavery, his rise inside of Potiphar's household, and then the accusation of Potiphar's wife. And now we find Joseph, who's in jail, and he's just kind of, once again, things seem to be going well. He's back in the bottom of the well again, right? He's going well, back down. And as we think about the story of Joseph, the story reminds us so many times of all of these little details that God orchestrates. And when we read the story of Joseph, we tend to know the end of the story. So we're all the time kind of like reading back into it. And the best way I can explain this is like reading the Old Testament with New Testament eyes, right? So we read the Old Testament and we go, why in the world did the Jews not figure this out? Like, this is not complicated, right? We read the Old Testament and we go, man, this makes sense. This isn't hard. And we get to the New Testament and Paul says, listen, the church was a mystery to the Old Testament. They could not figure it out. The Jews, they could not figure it out. There was a reason for that, right? Because God was giving them bits and pieces of the puzzle, but he was not giving them the picture yet. And then when Jesus comes, he steps back and he goes, listen, this is the picture. And you go, oh, that makes sense. The whole thing becomes clear with Jesus Christ. He's like the answer key that makes the whole puzzle make sense. But we read Joseph with that way, and we kind of go, yeah, see, we can see what God's doing. But stop for a second. Imagine if you're Joseph at this point in your life. You've tried to be a good kid to your dad. It wasn't your fault that your dad picked you to be the favorite. It wasn't your fault that your dad had a favorite wife and that your dad had a miserable existence and all of the other things that happened while he got more than one wives and on the wives being competitive against each other and all the family dynamics. And it wasn't Joseph's fault that his dad kept him home and then sent him to go check on his brothers, right? It wasn't Joseph's fault that his dad gave him a coat. It wasn't Joseph's fault that he had dreams. None of this was Joseph's fault. And so now Joseph finds himself in slavery, and he's like, man, this is horrible. I've been sold by my brother in slavery, and you can imagine standing there and people bidding on you, and eventually you get bought out by Potiphar, and he doesn't even know if you're a good slave or anything. He just takes a guess, and then Joseph ends up being a great servant to Potiphar, and he's doing so well that basically Potiphar gives him the keys to the house. He says, listen, I don't even want to know what I have. You just take care of it. And if you're Joseph, you're like, man, if I'm going to be a slave, this is probably as good as it's going to get. Like, everything seems to be going okay, Lord. Like, this isn't probably what I envisioned, but I'm doing okay. And then all of a sudden, Potiphar's wife, and all of a sudden, you're like in jail, and you're sitting there, and you're like, what just happened? Like, I was sold into slavery, and then I was working hard, and all of a sudden, I'm sitting in jail. And we find the story of Joseph in jail, and look at Genesis 39, verse 23. It says this about Joseph as a prisoner. The keeper of the prison did not look into anything that was under Joseph's authority, because the Lord was with him, and whatever he did, the Lord, key phrase there, made it prosper. Now, there was this position that we know from history inside of the Egyptian prison system that was called the scribe of the prison. It was the person who kept all of the prison records. It was the person, think of like it as the prison secretary. He's the guy who kept all the records of who was supposed to be in jail, for how long, who was supposed to get out, who was supposed to be doing what, who was supposed to never get out of jail, who was supposed to be killed, all of those things, right? Okay, so there's this guy. Now, normally this position is not run by prisoners. Makes sense, by the way, right? Right? If you were a prisoner and you were in charge of the records, which dictated when people got out of prison, shockingly, you would be up for parole, right? You'd be like, oh, look, my term's done, because you have the records. So they didn't give this task away to prisoners. Why in the world did Joseph get this task? Because Joseph was so dependable, he was so trustworthy, the guards basically said to Joseph, we know you won't cheat. Here you go. Now stop and think. Does Joseph have any hope of getting out of prison? No. He's not serving like a 3-year term. Okay? So the penalty for attempting to have an adultery or adulterous relationship with an Egyptian's wife was death. So he's already been spared death. There is no, like, parole meeting coming up. He's in prison forever. So here's Joseph. He has no hope of getting out, but he's still trustworthy. His character is still dependable. Now, the question I have when I go through the story is, we go, of course he was trustworthy, because, you know, he couldn't be not trustworthy if he's going to be second in command. But Joseph has no idea that he's going to be second in command, right? He's not like preparing himself. He's not like building his resume here. You know, he's not like, hey, listen, I'm going to be really trustworthy so I can kind of work up the food chain. This is it. There's no better place. He's in prison. He can't go anywhere. And to add to the story, we are introduced to two other people who come to visit him in Genesis 40, verse 1. And it came to pass after these things that the butler and the baker of the king of Egypt offended their lord, the king of Egypt. All right, so offended, we don't really know what they did, but we do know that they were going to be sentenced to death. So whatever they did was not, like, minor. They didn't, like, overcook the bread, okay? Probably they were more involved in some kind of plot to overthrow the king. Like, they were listening to somebody's plot of treason, and they were found out. Okay, so anyway, they go to jail. They go to jail. Verse 4, the captain of the guard charged who with them? Joseph, once again. The story gets even funnier at this point. All right, so here's this guy who's in prison, and the guards say, okay, who should watch them? We got a prisoner. What? We're going to let the prisoners watch the prisoners? This is by definition not a good plan, right? But Joseph was so trustworthy, they could trust prisoners to a prisoner. Verse 5, then the butler and the baker, the king of Egypt, who were confined in the prison, had a dream. Both of them, each man's dream in one night, and each man's dream with its own interpretation. Verse 6, Joseph comes in the morning, sees them, and they were sad. He can tell by their countenance they were sad. Now, maybe that verse does not stand out to you, but it stands out to me. These guys are in jail, and they're going to die. They didn't seem sad before. Joseph walks in after seeing this dream. Now they're sad. And I go, man, if I was going to be sad in this story, I think I'd already have been sad when I was in jail the first time. But they weren't. And they see their dreams, and now they're sad. And basically they say to them, verse 8, we each have a dream, and there's no interpreter of it. Now, remember who they are. They were royal servants. So if they had had this dream in their normal life before jail, they could have asked one of the wise men of Pharaoh's court, hey, listen, I had this dream. In jail, they obviously don't have any royal court to ask questions to or to pass along. Hey, listen, I had this dream. So they're like, we've had this dream, but I don't have any way to figure out what it is. And in verse 8, Joseph said to them, do not interpretations belong to God? Tell them to me, please. Okay, so he says to them, listen, if you tell me the dream, I will tell you what it says. Not because I have a special gift, not because I am like the interpreter of dreams, but because God, who is the one who gives dreams, also is the one who gives the interpretation of those dreams. And so if you want an answer, you have to ask God for this dream. Okay, so here is the two, and you basically have the cupbearer's dream is a good dream, and the baker's dream is a bad. And after the cupbearer's dream, he says to him, listen, remember me. Go to verse 14. Remember me when it is well with you, and please show kindness to me. Make mention of me to Pharaoh, and get me out of this house. For indeed I was stolen away from the land of the Hebrews, and I have done nothing here that they should put me into the dungeon. He says to the cupbearer, listen, you're going to go back to the Pharaoh. He's my only hope of pardon. This is the presidential pardon, if you will. He says, listen, bring up my story to the one guy who can solve my issue. If you're Joseph in the story, you have a little of something you might not have had before. Hope. You go, I just interpreted this guy's dream. He got good news. He's back at work. He's going to tell Pharaoh about me. And so you kind of go back to your job with a skip and a step. Go down to verse 23. Yet the chief butler did not remember Joseph, but forgot him. This verse is like the double whammy. Not only did he not remember him, he forgot him. The author is intentionally telling us that there was no stories of Joseph being spread around Pharaoh's palace. The butler is not walking around going, wow, there's this guy in the dungeon who interpreted my dream. He interpreted the baker's dream and they both came true. Nope. He gets back to his task and he completely forgets about Joseph. When we stop here at this point of the story, you kind of go, wow, like Joseph is down there, but he's got hope, but he doesn't know. 2 years pass after he interprets the dream. 2 years. How many days do you think Joseph wakes up in the morning and he's like, man, I wonder if today's the day? Maybe 2 months, 3 months, and then you kind of go, you know what? He didn't talk to Pharaoh. Not getting any better. Going to be here for the rest of my life. Then we get to chapter 41, and somebody else is going to have a dream. And it came to pass in chapter 41, verse 1, the end of 2 full years, that Pharaoh had a dream. So now Pharaoh is going to get a dream. And verse 5, he gets a second dream. And the purpose of what we're talking about, Joseph, is not to go into all of these dreams. So we're kind of just skimming over them. Verse 8, so he's had 2 dreams. Now it came to pass in the morning that his spirit was troubled, and he sent and called for all the magicians of Egypt and all the wise men. Told them their dreams. So he brings in the A-team, brings in the smartest Egyptians he can find. He says, solve this riddle. And there was nothing. It says, and Pharaoh told him his dreams, but there was no one who could interpret them for Pharaoh. Now we get some good news. Verse 9. Then the butler goes, hold on a minute. I was supposed to tell you something. There's this guy, and he can interpret your dream. So for 2 years, didn't come to his mind. But now that Pharaoh's had a dream, he's like, wait. Oh, dream. Yeah, there's this guy. Verse 9, he goes, I remember this. And so when Pharaoh was angry with the servants, verse 10, he put me in custody in the house of the captain. We each had a dream, verse 11, and he and I, and each of us dreamed according to the interpretation of his dream, and there was a young Hebrew with us there, a servant of the captain of the guard. Interesting term he gives to him. And he told us, he interpreted our dreams. It came to pass just as he interpreted. So it happened, he restored him to office and he hanged him. Then Pharaoh sent and called Joseph, and they brought him quickly out of the dungeon. And he shaved, changed his clothing, came to Pharaoh. It is interesting how this kind of story goes. The butler says to Pharaoh, there's the servant of the guard. I mean, he's not really a servant of the guard. He's a prisoner, okay? But to non-prisoners, he probably seemed like a servant of the guard. He's got a lot of responsibility. He's kind of there, but he was a prisoner. He goes, there's this guy. He interpreted my dream. And so they call for Joseph. Joseph has now lived for several years in a dungeon. He looked like he lived in a dungeon. And so you can't come to Pharaoh like that. So they're like, you should probably take a bath, shave, put on some non-dungeon attire, and head to see Pharaoh. So if you're Joseph, one day you wake up, you're doing the same thing you've been doing, you're just being faithful, you're just being faithful. All of a sudden the guards come in and they're like, you need to shave and take a bath. He's like, really? That would be helpful. But I'm in a dungeon, so it's not like we have like great amenities down here. You're like, no, you're going to go see Pharaoh. He has no idea why he's going to see Pharaoh. They're not like, hey, listen, you're going to go do this. He's like, you're just being brought in front of Pharaoh. This could be really good news. This could be really bad news. Okay? So once again, here's the story of Joseph, and he's going. So it says there in verse 16, it says to Pharaoh, it is not me. I don't answer these dreams. I don't interpret these dreams. But God will give Pharaoh an answer of peace. Let me just remind you that when the people like Daniel, Joseph, interpreted dreams, they always attributed the interpretation of that dream to God. It was not their gift. It was not their ability to look into people's dreams and say to them, this is what the meaning is. Now, this is significance, by the way, because if Joseph had the ability to interpret dreams on his own, which two dreams do you think he would have interpreted first? His own, right? He would have been like, I know what this dream is going to be, but he didn't. He did not know the meaning of his own dreams. So this is not Joseph's ability that he has. He's depending on God for this ability. And he says to Pharaoh, listen, he's going to give you an answer. So Joseph, once again, gives the answer to Pharaoh. Now, stop and think for a second. You're Pharaoh. You've just asked the wisest men in your nation to give you an answer, and they could not do it. Bring in the Hebrew prisoner. He answers this for you. Now he's got a problem. There's going to be 7 years of plenty followed by 7 years of famine. So Joseph says to him, listen, get someone really, really smart. Figure out what to do during the 7 years of plenty. Save up for the 7 years of famine, and you'll be good to go. And the Pharaoh looks around his room, wise men who had no answer. And Joseph, who answers them, and he goes, I need one smart guy. I'm going to go with you. I'm going to pick the one guy who actually could answer my question, right? Because if there's anybody who's going to be smart in this room, it's obviously not the people who had no idea about this. It's going to be the one guy who can answer it. Now, stop and think about Joseph's upbringing now. His father had given him the responsibility of overseeing his brothers in the field. He was in charge of all of Potiphar's household. All of the organization and the details and the administration and all that went in there. He's been in prison. What's his job been? Administration? Taking care of people, logistics, and details? All of the things that Joseph has gone through, although not necessarily pleasant, not necessarily the internship program that Joseph would have signed up for if he had a choice, all of those were doing something in Joseph's life. They were preparing him for this moment. As he stands in front of Pharaoh, and Pharaoh goes, you're going to do it. I am going to make you second in command. Anybody in the rest of the kingdom besides me, they're under you. So go get it done. You got 7 years. Make this thing happen. I want to take a quick pause. Have you ever thought about the rest of the people in the story who never show up now? What do you think was going through the mind of Potiphar's wife when she heard the news that Joseph was now second in command of the nation? What about the butler who forgot about him for 2 years? He's like, I forgot about you for 2 years. Oh no, he's my boss. Right? Think about all of the people that Joseph has been underneath, if you will, up until this point. Now he's over. The flow chart has now flipped upside down. But Joseph doesn't take vengeance on anyone. The story does not tell us that Joseph is vengeful. This is going to be even more important in just a minute because the people who have wronged him the most are about to show up. But all of these events in Joseph's life have pushed him to this point so he knows who God is, he understands what God's doing in his life, and God is not offering Joseph prosperity. It's not what he's doing. He has a relationship with Joseph. Pharaoh says it like this, verses 38 of chapter 41. And Pharaoh said to his servants, "Can we find such a one as this? A man in whom is the Spirit of God?" We'll get back to that in just a second. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Inasmuch as God has shown you in all this, there is no one as discerning and as wise as you. You shall be over my house. All of my people shall be ruled according to your word. Only in regard to the throne will I be greater than you." And Pharaoh said to Joseph, "See, I have set you over all of the land of Egypt." Here's Pharaoh, a worshiper of multiple gods, a nation that revered gods, lowercase g. They had many people whom they worshipped, many people who they bowed down to, many figures of deity and honor. And Pharaoh says to Joseph, "You're not like anybody else I've ever met before. You have the Spirit of God on you." Now, to be honest, I don't think Pharaoh here is saying to Joseph, "I recognize that you are like the servant of the one true God." I think he just recognizes that Joseph has an ability that nobody else has. He doesn't know where it came from. Understand, here's Joseph's life now supporting his faithfulness or backing up his words. "Hey, listen, I believe in God." But in all of these circumstances, it wasn't just a verbal thing. It turned into a life lived. Let's jump into the story now. So as we go through the story, he gathers up the food in chapter 41. 7 years of famine come, and it gets so bad that not only does Egypt have to open up their storehouses, but nations around the world, they run out of food, and they go, "Listen, we need to go to Egypt because they're the only ones who got food." So not only did Egypt save up enough for the Egyptians to live, but it saved up enough for the other nations around to come over and buy from the Egyptian grocery store. Okay? And so who is in charge of dispensing all of these things? Joseph. Now, once again, think about 7 years of plenty you've stored up. Okay? But you have to ration out everything that you've saved up because you've got to make it last 7 years. Right? So if you throw a bunch of parties and you're number one, your 2 through 6 is not going to go well. So Joseph is, once again, he's in charge of taking this out section by section. "Hey, listen, we've got to eat through our resources in a conservative time frame. We've got to make this last 7 years." And so when people came to get food from other nations, they had to ask Joseph for it. Okay? So verse 1, chapter 42, Jacob saw that there was grain in Egypt. Jacob said to his sons, I love this phrase, "Why do you look at one another?" Hey, stop looking at somebody else to do something. Get up and go get us some grain. Okay? He said, "Indeed, I have heard that there is grain in Egypt. Go down to that place and buy for us there that we may live and not die." So Joseph's 10 brothers went down to buy grain in Egypt. But Jacob did not send Joseph's brother Benjamin with his brothers, for he said, lest some calamity befall him. Okay, Benjamin, he is now the protected one. Last time I sent Joseph to the brothers, he didn't come back. So now, Benjamin, you don't go anywhere. You stay with me. The brothers go. So they show up, and they ask for some grain. Now, they don't recognize Joseph. More than likely, Joseph is the second in command now in Egypt, so he is dressed in Egyptian clothes. He doesn't look like the young boy that they sent away with a coat of many colors. He's obviously older. Years have passed. His facial features may even be slightly hardened. I mean, he was a slave. He lived in a dungeon for a couple of years. And so, and then he's there. And then instead of speaking to his brothers directly, he speaks to him through an interpreter. Doesn't want to give himself away. But he recognizes his brothers. He recognizes them. And he asks them the question, "Oh, is this all in your family?" Right? He's trying to get information without going, "Hey, where's Benjamin?" Right? I mean, because that would obviously, how do you know Benjamin? So he asks him, like, "Hey," and they go, "Oh, we know we got one more, but it didn't come." And so, So he says, listen, if you want to get more grain in the future, you better all come. So he's got a plan. He's going to wait for Benjamin to come, and he's going to hide his cup in Benjamin's bag, and he's going to see if his brothers have changed. See, remember, when they had an opportunity to get rid of Joseph, they were all willing to jump at it. He's going to give them an opportunity to get rid of Benjamin. He wants to see if they're going to take the same opportunity. Listen, we got rid of Joseph once, got rid of Benjamin, we've got rid of all the favorite kids, now we're good to go. Joseph understood that his dad would have switched his favoritism from Joseph to Benjamin. He understood what would happen when he wasn't there, and so he's laying out this test, this trial, if you will, for his brothers. So his brothers come back. I think Joseph probably gave him enough grain that he figured out, like, they'll be back in about so much amount of time. And they came back, and they bring Benjamin. And so he's excited about this, but Jacob is not, right? So they say, listen, if we go back, we've got to take Benjamin. Jacob's like, you are not taking Benjamin. You want to eat, we're taking Benjamin. It's the only option we've got. He said, if we come back without him, we're not going to get any food. And Egypt wasn't like around the corner where they could just like walk over and see, okay, we'll try it. No, we'll come back. It's a long drive, right? Okay, so they've got to make this journey. So listen, we're taking Benjamin. And so they go. Look at verse 8, though. Judah says to Israel, or to Jacob, his father, send the lad with me, and we will arise and go, that we may live and not die, both we and you, and also our little ones. But notice verse 9. I myself will be a surety for him. From my hand you shall require him. If I do not bring him back to you and set him before you, let me bear the blame forever. Verse 10. For if we have not lingered, surely by now we'd have returned the second time. Here's Judah, and he says, listen, I will be responsible to make sure Benjamin comes back. Fast forward through the story now. They go, we understand the cup, and then it comes back. And verse 18, now the men were afraid because they were brought to Joseph's house. They said it's because of the money, which was turned in our sack for the first time. So that we may make a cause against us and seize us, make us slaves. When they drew near the house of the steward of Joseph's house, they talked to him at the door and said, oh, sir, we came indeed down by the first time to buy food, but it happened when we came to the encampment that we opened our sacks, and there each man's money was in the mouth of his sack, and our money with full weight. So we brought it back in our hand. We brought down our money in our hands to buy food. We do not know who put it money in our sacks. They said, hey, don't worry about it. Verse 23. The God of your fathers has given you treasure in your sacks. I had your money. And then he brought Simeon out to them. So the man brought the men to Joseph's house, and he gave them water, and they washed their feet, gave the donkeys food. All of this is going well. Chapter 44. He commanded the steward of the house, saying, fill each man's sack with food, as much as they can carry, and put each man's money in the mouth of the sack, and also put my cup, the silver cup, in the mouth of the sack of the youngest of his grain money. Did according to the word that Joseph has spoken. All right, so I chuckle because if the first time the money was back in your sacks when you left, when you checked it out on the road, don't you think you would have checked before you left the second time? Be like, let's just double check before we go out the door here. Nothing weird going on. They don't. They're leaving. All right, so when they had gone out of the city, we're not yet far off, so they're not far away from where Joseph is at. Joseph said to his steward, go up, follow the men. When you overtake them, say to them, why have you repaid evil for good? Is not this the one from which my Lord drinks, and which one he practiced divination? You have done an evil in doing so. And so overtook them and spoke the words to them, and they said to him, why does my Lord say these things? Far be it from us that your servant should do such a thing. Look, when we brought back to you from the land of Canaan the money which is found in the mouth of our sacks, how then could we steal silver or gold from your Lord's house? So they're so confident that they didn't do this, they say something here in verse 9. With whoever of your servants it is found, let him die. And we also will be my Lord's slaves. And listen, we didn't do this. If you find it here, we'll be your slaves, and you can kill whoever did it. And he said, okay, let it be according to your words. With he whom is found shall be my slave, and you shall be blameless. And each man speedily took down his sack to the ground and opened his sack. So he searched. He began with the oldest and left off with the youngest, and the cup was found in Benjamin's sack. Verse 13. The same brothers that sold Joseph into slavery responded like this. Then they tore their clothes, and each man loaded his donkey and returned to the city. Now, only Benjamin is required to be a slave. Okay? Verse 10. Let it be according to your words, he who with his found shall be my slave, and you shall be blameless. Okay? You got 10, 11 people here. Whoever find, we find it in you, or if we find it, that person's a slave, the other 10 people are free. So they find it in Benjamin's bag. The brothers rip off their clothes, and they could have just gone home. They could have turned around and gone home, but they didn't. They go back to the city. Verse 14, so Judah and his brothers came to Joseph's house, and he was still there, and they fell before him on the ground. Joseph said to them, what deed is this you have done? Did you not know that such a man as I can certainly practice divination? It's one of those like funny sayings. He says, it's like moms, who say, don't you know I have eyes in the back of my head? Joseph says, why would you try this? Wouldn't you have figured out at this point that I'm smarter than you? Right? Now, he can't really practice divination. He put the cup in there. So, I mean, it's not like, it's like when you do something, you're like, oh, I know. It's like a magician who opens the box and there's no one in there. He knows there's no one in there. Right? It's his trick. Joseph said to them, I mean, verse 16, then Judah said, what shall we say to my Lord? What shall we speak? Or how shall we clear ourselves? God has found the iniquity of your servants. Here we are, my Lord's slaves, both we and he also with whom the cup was found. But he said, far be it from me that I should do so. The man in whose hand the cup was found, he shall be my slave. As for you, go up in peace to your fathers. He's given them the choice again. Listen, you can go. I only want Benjamin. And Judah came near to him and said, O Lord, please let your servant speak a word in my Lord's hearing, and do not let your anger burn against your servant, for you are even like Pharaoh. My Lord asked his servant, saying, have you a father or a brother? We said to my Lord, we have a father, an old man, a child of his old age who is young. His brother is dead, and he alone is left of his mother's children, and his father loves him. And you said to your servants, bring him down to me that I may set my eyes on him. We said to my Lord, the lad cannot leave his father, for if he should leave his father would die. But you said to your servants, unless your youngest brother comes down with you, you shall not see my face anymore. So it was that we went up, your servant, my father, we told him the words of my Lord, and your father said, go back and buy us a little food. And we said, we cannot go down if our youngest brother is not with us. Then we will go down, for we may not see the man's face unless our youngest brother is with us. Then your servant, my father, said to us, you know that my wife bore me two sons. And the one went out for me, and I said, surely he is torn to pieces, and I have not seen him since. For if you take this one also from me, and calamity befalls him, you shall bring down my gray hair with sorrow to the grave. Now therefore, when I come to your servant, my father, and the lad is not with us, since his life is bound up in the lad's life, it will happen. When he sees that the lad is not with us, that he will die. So your servants will bring down the gray hair of your servant, our father, with the sorrow to the grave. For your servant became surety for the lad to my father, saying, if I do not bring him back, then I shall bear the blame before my father forever. Now therefore, please, let your servant remain instead of the lad as slave to my Lord, and let the lad go up with his brothers. For how shall I go up to my father if the lad is not with me? Lest perhaps I see the evil that would come upon my father. All of a sudden, these brothers do not appear to be the same brothers that Joseph had. They say to Joseph, although they don't know it's Joseph, they say to him, we can't do this to Dad. Now, we know the story, and they're not really sharing the story of why their other brother is dead or gone. But Joseph knows. We know the story. And they're basically saying, listen, something happened the first time and our brother is gone. We can't let this happen a second time. We can't do that thing again. Joseph, chapter 45, could not restrain himself before all those who stood by him. And he cried out, make everyone go out for me. Sends all of the servants and all of the staff away. Verse 3, and Joseph said to his brothers, I am Joseph. Does my father still live?
And then another great phrase in this text. But his brothers could not answer him, for they were dismayed in his presence. All right, we've been thinking through the story in Joseph's perspective. Let's be the brothers for a minute. All right, so you've just been with Benjamin. The cup has been found in his sack. You've ripped your clothes. This is not going well. You know if you go home without Benjamin, your dad is probably going to die from just grief. Everything about this trip has gone bad. And you're standing there, and this guy in Egyptian clothing says to you, "Hey, I'm Joseph, your brother. Is my dad still alive?" Now just stop and think what's going through your mind right then. Oh no. This is not good news if you're the brothers. They are not like, "Oh, Joseph, we've been missing you. Great to see you again. Wow, you look great. Last time we saw you, you looked tied up in ropes and it wasn't..." No. Like they are now under a guy who they sold into slavery. All of a sudden, you think your day couldn't get much worse? If you're the brothers, then all of a sudden he got worse. Because the guy you're answering to is the guy you sold into slavery. But Joseph was not out for revenge. Verse 4, Joseph said to his brothers, "Please come near to me." He said to them, "I am Joseph, your brother, whom you sold into Egypt." Verse 5, "But now do not therefore be grieved or angry with yourselves because you sold me here. For God sent me before you to preserve life. For these 2 years the famine has been in the land, and there are still 5 years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvesting. And God sent me before you to preserve a posterity for you in the earth and to save your lives by a great deliverance. So now it was not you who sent me here, but God. And he has made me a father to Pharaoh and a lord of all his house and a ruler throughout all the land of Egypt. Hurry, go up to my father and say to him, 'Thus says your son Joseph, God has made me lord of all Egypt. Come down to me, do not tarry. You shall dwell in the land of Goshen. You shall be near to me, you and your children, your children's children, your flocks and your herds and all that you have. There I will provide for you, and lest you and your household and all that you have come to poverty, for there shall be still 5 years of famine. And behold, your eyes and the eyes of my brother Benjamin see that it is my mouth that speaks to you. So you shall tell my father all my glory in Egypt and of all that you have seen. You shall hurry and bring back my father down him." Then he fell on his brother's Benjamin's neck and wept, and Benjamin wept on his neck. Moreover, he kissed all of his brothers and wept over them. And after that, his brothers talked with him. Verse 16, "Now the report of it was heard in Pharaoh's house, saying, 'Joseph's brothers have come.' So it pleased Pharaoh and his servants well. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, 'Do not say to your brothers, do this, load your animals and depart, go to the land of Canaan, bring your father and your households and come to me, and I will give you the best of the land of Egypt, and you will eat of the fat of the land. Now you are commanded.'" He doesn't offer them the option. He says, "You do this." I'm Pharaoh. He doesn't give options to people. "Do this, take carts out of the land of Egypt for your little ones and for your wives, and bring your father and come. And do not be concerned about your goods, for the best of all the land of Egypt is yours." He says to Joseph's brother, "Hey, listen, when you go back, take some wagons and carts and stuff, so when your kids have to come, they don't have to walk the journey. And don't bring your stuff." That Hebrew furniture is junk. We've got better stuff here in Egypt. Right? So you come and we'll give you new appliances and new houses, and we're going to put you in the best of the land. Just stop real quick. This household is not very many people. This is not millions of people that are coming. Just a cluster. 50, 70 people coming over. In 450 years, there'll be 2+ million Israelites in Egypt. The number of blessing from God that God preserves to bring into Egypt, to what God is going to bring out of Egypt and the part of the story of the nation of Israel, and we think of the 10 plagues, that number is going to be crazy. So Jacob and his family comes. Now, we kind of read this story as like a happy story at this point. But Joseph's brothers still have to tell their dad that Joseph's not dead. Imagine having that conversation with your dad. "Hey, dad, you won't believe it. We met Joseph. What do you mean you met Joseph? Yeah. Turns out he's second in command in Egypt. He's the guy who left our brother there the first time, and then we had to bring Benjamin back. That was him the whole time. Well, why would he be giving you like these weird tests and stuff? What happened to his coat? Covered in blood? Imagine having that conversation. Yeah, just kidding, Dad. We didn't actually think Joseph died. We sold him for lunch money. They go to Egypt, and now, as we fast forward through the story, Jacob dies. Israel is dead. And Joseph's brothers go, this is the moment Joseph's been waiting for. He doesn't have to worry about Dad being mad at him if he kills us. And so, we're in trouble. But Joseph was not seeking revenge. Go to Genesis 50, verse 20. The theme of Joseph's life. But as for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good, in order to bring it about, as it is this day, to save many people alive. Now therefore, do not be afraid. I will provide for you and your little ones. And he comforted them, and he spoke kindly to them. Joseph was hated by his brothers. He was stripped of his robe, sold for the price of a slave, taken to Egypt, tempted, falsely accused, bound in chains, condemned with criminals. But Joseph says, God meant it for good. It's impossible to live like Joseph without faith in the sovereignty of God. That God doesn't make mistakes. And if you picked up a little thing in the back, we're not even going to cover it. It's just really for you. But I was reading a thing from John MacArthur, and I just copied it and put it on that page of the list of the sovereignty of God in different circumstances, and then some references for it. So you can do a little study if you want, a little faith into practice. We can trust the sovereignty of God because God's plan is always good. So you may be at the point of your life, you feel like Joseph who's been sold into slavery. You may feel like you're in the point of life where you're working hard, but you've been falsely accused. You may be in the point of life where you feel like you've been serving God and you've been forgotten about. You can trust the sovereignty of God. You can trust the goodness of God in your life. Joseph, in the midst of all of the things that attacked him, that came after him, he was able to trust who God is. We've just considered one illustration of God's perfect sovereignty. The using of wicked people to accomplish His perfect plans. Psalm 115:3 reminds us that our God is in heaven. He does whatever He pleases. He is a God who is in control, who can be trusted. He can be relied on. The theme of Joseph's life is simple. God is in control, and we can trust Him for the outcome. This week, let's live like we're trusting God for the outcome. What does that mean? That means we don't worry about the things of our life. Does a flower worry about the rain? Does a bird worry? Why? God provides. But we as His people, sometimes we aren't quite as trusting. My dog, Oreo, he knows our patterns well. So on Wednesdays, we take the boys to piano, and he gets to ride in the car down the road to Miss Reddick's house and then back. And he loves it. He gets really, really excited, like, oh, I know what day it is. Let's go for a car ride, right? Oreo is not panicked about his day-to-day life. He's just, man, my family's great. Let's do something, right? He trusts in his family. Why? Because he can. It's their dog. If my dog is willing to trust me, why in the world are we not willing to trust the Creator redeemer, and sustainer of our universe. Why are we so tempted to be like, no, God, I don't think you can handle this. I'll take this one back. Joseph's that illustration of it doesn't have to be perfect. Doesn't always have to be healthy and wealthy and prosperous. But it is God's good plan for us. God is teaching us who He is. He's pointing us to His Word and to His will. I went a little long tonight, and I apologize, but it's a good part of the story, and I didn't want to skip the details, because then I had to have a third part after Thanksgiving. So